Short Answer. On the show today, we have two fabulous people from the Advisory Group here to advise us on all things financial when it comes to an investment. Welcome to Property Matters. Welcome along to another week, and if you've tuned in live, then it's that fabulous thing of knowing there's a public holiday on Friday. Hopefully you're doing something special for Matariki with you and your family, although short weeks, they tend to sort of create the workload because we've still got to fit 5 days in, but let's nab it because the next one's not until the end of October. If you're tuning in via our podcast at a different time, then sorry, it might not be a public holiday this week, but remember you can listen to us on Spotify, Apple and Samsung, iHeartRadio and on YouTube or wherever you like to get your podcasts. And thank you. I've been seeing some amazing comments coming up on some of our YouTube podcasts lately. Really love it when our listeners give us feedback. So thank you very much. And you can follow us at Property Matters Radio on Facebook as well. Now, absolutely delighted to welcome back Aman Chand from the Advisory Group, but he wasn't with the Advisory Group when we last caught up with him a little while ago. Welcome back. Great to have you here.
Thank you. It's been a long time, but it's great to be here.
Lovely to have you here. And you've brought along a colleague, Rafe Williams. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Yeah. Thanks for having me on.
Look, it's great to have you both here. And Aman, you've got a really good memory because before we came on air, he remembered that last time he was here was an episode we did with two brand new first home buyers telling their journey as teachers in education and having to get a house. And you'll be pleased to know they're both still in education and doing very, very well indeed, which is awesome.
Yeah, it was quite interesting because I do recall back then there were challenges getting into your first home.
Yeah.
And hey, fast forward a few more years, we've got similar issues.
Different challenges, but still plenty of challenges. Yeah. So look, before we unpack your job, your work, and we're going to talk all sorts of things financial, let's talk about you first. So tell us a little bit about your journey. What's your career looking like?
My career, since I graduated, I started working in a CA practice, chartered accounting practice. Yeah, that's back in 1996. Yeah, that reveals my age. So I started in Whangarei, a very nice small practice back then, Grant Thornton. And after a few years there, I moved to the mighty Waikato. Unfortunately, they were not so mighty this weekend. and during my days in Whangarei and Waikato, different accounting practices, different industry. It was great because there were smaller parts of the country, very beautiful parts of the country, and gave me some good exposure to, you know, some of the industries that, you know, being labeled as the backbone of New Zealand, like farming and agriculture. Mm. So in addition to the experience that I've got now, I've got some good historical knowledge which are still relevant today in terms of agriculture and accounting and taxation issues surrounding that, which is a separate story. Mm. Then I moved to Auckland back a long time ago, 2000. My wife got a job here, so I just do what most husbands do, just follow her to the mighty Auckland.
Wise
and,
man.
And, well, it's been good.
Good.
Well, at least it was a good outcome last weekend with the Super Rugby, with the drought over. So that since then, I've been floating around various accounting practices, and I'm currently a client director at the Advisory Group.
So what does that mean? What's the client director? What's your role?
My role is It's kind of split in the middle, looking after staff, firstly, from an office perspective, getting juniors to any staff below my level, making sure that they're doing what they're doing, they're enjoying what they're doing, they're growing in what they're doing along the way. So we do have graduates, so it is my responsibility or our responsibility to make sure, you know, there is a career plan for them and not just, you know, your traditional boring accounting job. And then on the flip side, which is the more important thing, is client management, you know, looking after our clients, make sure they're served, what they need, communicate with them, so avoid surprises, you know, keeping them happy. Yeah.
Brilliant. Sounds like some variety in that mix, which is good.
Yes, there's a variety. It can be challenging. finding staff is very hard at the moment, is within many other outfits. Mm. Always open to new staff, and networking is quite important, which is quite good at the moment. You know, after the COVID days, it was very hard to get back into the networking side there. So, you know, we met first before COVID, and now we're meeting after COVID.
Yeah, funny, eh? Okay, and Raf, tell us your career journey. Take us back.
Back, right? Take you back 10 years. That's how long I've been in this industry for. Graduated in 2014 from Auckland Uni. And yeah, got my first job in a sole practice practitioner firm, which is very good. It was out west, northwest, and just really learnt how to do basic accounting, because what they teach you at uni doesn't actually apply in the real job. and yeah, so I grew out west really, which was good. Some big firms out west, UHY, where I spend most of my time. And then floated around, moved to the shore, and then settled down in Newmarket for a bit, and grew there at Newmarket, which was great. It's one of the better roles, I would say. And then recently joined the advisory group as a senior manager, and then got promoted to associate director, which was very exciting. And yeah, just loving my time currently at the advisory group.
And what does your role entail then as an associate director?
Similar to Roman, you're looking after staff, their needs, their challenges, spending a lot of time with them, helping them grow. And yeah, you really want to help them and develop them, and nurture as well. And then on the other side is looking after clients, just trying to be proactive really. And that's what you want. So clients can then come to you with any issues they have. They feel comfortable talking to you, and you can just assist with any problems they have. And, you know, just before this, I had a client that told me that it was nice to have someone being proactive with his accounts. And it was nice to hear. You don't get much positive feedback sometimes in the job, but that was good. So, yeah, it's good to be on the front foot with clients, and that's how I tend to work.
Brilliant.
And yeah, the broad ranges that I kind of cover. Been doing a lot of space in the cryptocurrency markets at the moment, which is always interesting. And then, you know, retail, construction, overseas businesses, and then servicing high net worth individuals, which is always a challenge, even though people think it's very easy. and yeah.
Cool. And tell us a little bit, before we sort of delve into the financial side, what or who is the advisory group? Obviously, we've got a sense of you two, but as a company, who are they?
So I'll take this. It's an advisory group. They were founded back in 2006. We have three awesome directors. We've got Sadir Lala, Martin Henderson, and Graham Lawrence. We've got Graham's part of the tax department, which he founded in 2022. So he's been a great addition to the firm. So any complex tax issues that we may have, we can always just run to the tax department, which is very handy because, you know, it's not, property is especially not easy. And I believe the firm's grown since then. We sit at around 25 to 30 employees, which is very nice. So it's all hands on, really. Anything you want to add, Mark?
No, we've got a good mix at the top, if you like. You know, so we've got Martin, and you know, he's a very good in the business advisory space. We've got Graham, like what Raf said, in the tech space, and then we've got Sudhir, who's very good in the M&A space. Mergers and acquisitions. So the firm itself was founded back in 2006, and it has grown to where we are now. You know, with recent acquisitions like Raf and myself at that level, it just kind of demonstrates the growth they're facing. The client base have shifted from, you know, your traditional accounting practices. Now, nowadays, we get more complex clients, offshore clients, different structures, and very transactional issues as well. You know, how do you deal with this particular aspect of it there? So having those three skill set at the top is quite good. My experience coming into here is varied as well. I am very strong in tax myself, and I've got the business advisory side to it. So when I'm doing your normal compliance work from a client's perspective, like end of the year accounts, so, you know, suddenly I'll be throwing my tax hat as well. You know, what's missing? How can we make the best of this? You know, is there any opportunities to minimize tax? So all that starts coming in. Rev has got more business advisory experience, you know, including forecasting. And like you said, new ways of doing things like cryptocurrency. Yeah. So the top level is quite wide. You know, we've got a lot of experience. And what that does make us is we can provide good quality services, you know, without big overheads, if you like.
Yeah. Does the government and our tax department consider cryptocurrency, you know, the same as any other currency when it comes to, well, you've earned it this way, so you need to pay tax on it, etc.?
The government have a very strong approach on it at the moment. Yeah, it's kind of, they're treating it like what you'd call trading stock. Where they basically take a starting point and assuming that you've bought it with the intention to resell it at some point.
And their view that comes around with that is say, well, if you bought a cryptocurrency, what income can you earn from it while you're holding it? And back then, when crypto became the thing, there was nothing else. The only way you could actually get cash out is to sell it. So what IRD has done is said, well, clearly the only way to make money out of this is to sell it. And if you'll generally sell it when the prices justify the sale. So you bought it with an intention of resale, similar to gold. Like, why would you buy gold? Because no one, like, if you buy a bare piece of land, at least you could give it, lend it out for grazing, if you like, or build a house on it and rent it out. But the whole crypto space has changed over the last few years. You know, now you could buy crypto on which you could earn crypto dividends and crypto interest. So it is still a very tricky space. Like Rev said, IRD is quite, it's all taxable. Yeah, may not be, but it's all needs to be thought through, unfortunately.
Yeah, so if you do have it, it needs to need to have a person who kind of knows the space and what would be considered trading stock and what would kind of be considered long-term investments, where that's taxed very differently.
Plus, you know, there was a call to provide some guidance on salary and wages because some employees were actually requesting that they be paid in cryptos. So IRD actually issued a ruling that, well, if you pay your employees in crypto, we're still expecting a cash payment of PAYE deductions.
The IRD hasn't set up a crypto deposit yet for them. they're not accepting their tax in crypto.
I do have a crypto department.
So the world is changing. All right, we'll see how we've got time later on and we'll unpack a little bit more about the advisory group. But I'm keen to jump into some of the property tax changes that's taking place. So first of all, when we look at commercial property, what are you seeing change in this space?
Well, just to revisit a bit of a background. So commercial property, we could depreciate them before 2010. Then what happened is the National Government came in and they removed it, saying, well, the depreciation rate is going to be zero. Then what happened, COVID came along, and we had the Labor government, and they reinstated the depreciation for commercial buildings as part of their response to COVID-19 pandemic. So what that allowed landlords was to claim depreciation at 2% diminishing value method or 1.5% straight line method. So as we all know, nothing is certain in life, especially when it comes to taxes. So the new government now is reverting back the depreciation rate to zero for buildings with an estimated useful life of 50 years or more, with effect from the 24, 25 and future income years. So in simple terms, what that means is for 31st March balance date taxpayer, it's effective from 1st of April 2024.
Right.
So the depreciation rate goes back to zero.
Right. And what about commercial fit-outs?
Well, that's where the opportunities still exist because they can still be depreciated. Now, commercial fit-outs just includes, not generally, it includes a non-structural items, part of the building. You know, there's a special ruling from IAD. I believe it's about 50 pages. you know, they talk about fit-outs, what is covered, what is not. You know, so traditional things that might be included as a fit-out is maybe some, you know, carpets, flooring, electrical work, security systems, air conditioning units, chattels, etc. So, you know, these items can be still captured separately in your books. They can be capitalized and depreciated. Now, some of these items carry some significant depreciation rates. So it will be in your best interest to identify fit-outs when you're looking at acquiring a commercial property.
So what does all this mean for an owner of a commercial property?
So I suppose the biggest thing is when you're purchasing a new commercial property now. So what does all this mean there? So we know depreciation rate is going to be zero for the structural items, right? So all it means is you have to make sure that when you're going through this negotiation process is you can split out in the sale and purchase agreement what is the value of the land, what is the value of the building, and what is the value of the chattels, and go further with chattels and identify what chattels have been acquired, because different chattel carries different depreciation rate. So if you have a blanket just fit out, then you're stuck with a one rate for all the chattels.
Mm-hmm.
So back in 2021, there was a new rule came out. It's called purchase price allocation. So when someone sells an asset or business, the rules came in and say, well, the vendor and the seller has to agree on what assets has been bought and sold. Because what was happening in the past is the vendor was allocating the price differently across the assets being sold, and the purchaser was allocating the price differently with the assets acquired. So a traditional problem in context of property was land, right? So land cannot be depreciated, and everyone wants to allocate a higher piece to land. So it's a tax-free capital gain. Whereas the purchaser would, back then, when depreciation rates were allowed on buildings, would allocate more to buildings, saying, okay, now I've got more tax deductions. So IRD saw that problem, mm-hmm. and back in 2021, they legislated that you have to agree to a price. So, you know, if you allocated $100 for an apple here, we'll see the flip.
Right.
So now this creates a issue for commercial properties. Now, for commercial properties, a purchase price allocation is compulsory if the price is in excess of $1 million, right? So when someone is selling a property beyond $1 million, the sale and purchase agreement needs to address all those issues. So, and it's not compulsory if the price ends up below $1 million, but now it will be in the buyer's best interest to negotiate mm-hmm. one allocation in the sale and purchase regardless of the price.
Right. Is there any sort of, I guess, final thoughts or opportunities that you see for this commercial space?
Final thoughts on this one here is, firstly, with the depreciation rate reverting back to zero, you know, consider what does it mean in terms of your tax liabilities coming up. For 31st March 2025, terminal tax liability will go up, and most likely your provisional tax will go up. So think about that, try and quantify that, fit it with your cash flow.
Mm.
The second thing is what we just talked about, the purchase price allocation. So regardless of the price, try and negotiate it. What will be the best outcome for you? Mm. So it will never, you know, it might be a challenge, but you'll have to start that process and reach a middle ground most times. In most instances, you'll have to be reaching a middle ground with the vendor.
Just to add to that, purchase price allocation, if ones are not done, falls on the vendor first to get one approved.
Okay.
Which they have to submit to IRD. If that's not done within a certain time frame, it then can fall to the purchaser. They have to submit that to the IRD as well.
Right.
Yeah. So there's something to think about there if one's not done.
Mm. Can end up to be a very awkward situation if you have to be doing this separately, because if the purchaser does it, because the vendor has not, then the vendor will be stuck with that.
Mm. Yeah.
So it is something not to take lightly. you know, get it straight. And the final thought on commercial property, I think what I have to remember with commercial space, there's still no loss ring fencing like we have in residential property, and we'll talk about that a bit later. There's no bright line test for commercial property. Again, we'll talk about the bright line a bit later. And there's no restriction on interest deductibility at all, like residential we have, but that's being phased in.
All right. Raf, we'll move to residential then, throwing the ball to your court now.
Give me the hard one.
Yeah, lots of conversations obviously recently around bright line tests. So first of all, give us a little bit of history and background, and then help our listeners understand where and how and when is this bright line changing.
Yeah, so people may be aware that bright line test is changing back to 2 years from the start of the 1st of July 2024. Is a few weeks away.
Someone listening doesn't even know what bright line is.
No, right. So the bright line is when you buy a residential property, you could be required to pay tax on the sale if it's sold within a certain period. Currently, that period is set for 10 years and 5 years for new builds. And that period is set to drop to 2 years from the 1st of July 2024. And so that takes into account the purchase, going simple here, the purchase price date, and then when it's sold. And if that period is within that bright line period, you could be paying tax on the sale of that property.
So with the bright line, I think the key thing of it, well, I mean, if you go back to the history, it's been one of those tests. It kind of deems that you bought a property with an intention of resale to make IRD's life easier, if you like. You know, so, you know, to avoid going into fights with taxpayers and say, why did you buy it? You sold it within a year. So from an IRD's perspective, that was fantastic. You know, like if you sold everything within 2 years, great. But then what has happened over the years, it's kept on changing. 2 years became 5 years, 5 years became 10 years with an exemption for new build, which is 5 years. And it became very difficult to track, you know. And so gone were the days when someone called you and said, hey, I've got a question. Is this subject to bright line test? You know, you need to actually apply some thought now. So national government, as it promised, you know, he said, we're going to go back to the 2 year. But from 1st of July 2024.
Right.
So we still need to be careful there. So if we had a sale and purchase agreement entered on 20th June, for example, but it settles after 1st of July, you're still stuck with the old rules.
Right.
So the start date is the day usually you sign, not sign, but when a sale and purchase agreement is presented and signed. Not when it's settled, per se there. So you need to be still careful. And that's why there's been a lot of speculation in the media said that the listing will go up from 1st of July, you know, because there would be a lot of properties that are most likely to be stuck in the 10-year bright line rule, which suddenly will fall back to 2 years.
It really mucked up the Kiwi DIY person who used to love buying, you know, that house that needed a lot of work, quickly turn it around in 6 months and make a profit. But actually, that was kind of their core business. You know, this killed that, didn't it?
Yeah, core business. And like you said, I suppose it was part of Kiwi culture, wasn't it?
Yeah, very much so.
So, you know, it was more like a hobby too for some people. You know, someone who did have a passion about building and things, but that was not their daytime job.
Anything else we need to know about bright line?
Well, bright line, well, the good thing is there's some rollover reliefs.
What's that?
What that means is sometimes I might have bought a property under my own name, but then I said, oh, maybe I should have put it under a trust.
Right.
Or another structure. So what that rollover relief does is say, okay, in that case, yes, Aman, you can transfer your property to Aman Trust. And what that means is the trust is deemed to have acquired the property as the same date as I did, at the same cost. So what for me, there's no bright line because I'm selling something at the same price. So there's no gain, there's no losses. And the trust actually gets the date I bought the property for at the same cost, though. So the government has kind of realized that there's a situation where people will want to move their property to another structure, or there was a structure in place and they want to get it back. Now, I had a trust that held my property, a rental property, but because the trust laws have become very complex, with the trust tax rates going up to 39%, mm-hmm. and disclosure rules with beneficiaries, all this additional compliance. So some people have been, I want to wind my trust up, right? So without these rules, a trust will be deemed to have sold the property to me. And that could have been subject to the bright line test. So right. What this rollover relief does is saying, well, no, we're getting it back to the settler of the trust, the person who set up the trust. So it will go back at the same date, at the same cost.
Right.
So there's some different structures this rollover relief can work with. Look-through companies, LTCs, which became popular for rental properties, and trust is the other one. So going back and forth, makes it a bit easier. Mm. But it's just more to correct. I mean, this is not a tax dodge, if you like. Mm-hmm. It's more to correct where it should have been held in the first place. And everyone's situation is different, right? Yeah.
All right. Let's move on. Interest limitation rules. Talk us through that.
Okay. So this one.
Very hot, sexy topics tonight for property managers.
So like I said, with commercial property, thank God, we don't have these rules.
Yes.
So just going back a while, what happened? So, the national government is changing it. So what was the rules before? So the rules before was very simple. Everyone got a deduction for it. Then the Labor government decided to change everything and said, well, look, if a property was acquired on or after 27th March 2021, you get zero deduction on interest. But if your property was acquired before 27th March 2021 and the loan was drawn down before that date, then interest was kind of phased out. So basically, till September 2021, it was 100%. March 2022, it was 75%. Then 31st March 2023, it drops still 75%. 31st March 24, 50%. Then if those rules were still in play, 2025, it would be 25%. And then from 2025, 1st of April 25 onwards, it would have been zero. What this government has done is saying starting from 1st of April, right, 2024, mm-hmm. you can claim now 80% of the interest deduction. So they're facing it back in. And this 80% applies to, it's regardless when you drew down the loan, before or after 27th March 2021. So you'll probably have a few investors out there at the moment who can't claim anything.
Right.
Right? Mm. But from this year, 1st of April 2024, they can claim 80%.
And what's your thoughts and feelings on this?
It's a good thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that's a sensible and tax legislation to have. And just to complete the loop on that one, and then from 1st of April 2025, everyone can claim 100%. So the reality is money is being borrowed, interest has been paid to buy a property which generates taxable income. So it's really silly not to allow that deduction, right? I have a very good friend of mine who's got a trust with one rental property, and 31st March 2024, that's not changing. It's still 50%,
right,
depending on when you drew down the loan. So if you drew the loan down before 27th March 2021, so for the year just ended, 31st March 2024, it was still 50%. Now, that has thrown the trust with a tax liability with $6,000. Mm-hmm. And the trust doesn't have that money because it's really resulting from denying 50% deduction.
Mm.
So it is good. I think a lot of investors will be relieved with this change, but there's probably two more years of pain, 31st March 2024 and 31st March 2025.
And there's some exceptions to this rule?
Yes.
When it comes to, build-to-rent developments, etc.?
Yeah, current exception. So if you have a new build, you get to claim 100% of the interest, regardless of when it was bought. And that's one exception. Some other exceptions...
That's perhaps the biggest exception.
That's the biggest one, yeah.
So it's a new build. That was just mainly to encourage people carry on building to allow them. So you can see it was a bit unfair. People don't, I mean, to build, to meet the definition of a new build, it was quite hard. You have to have, I believe, 20 units in one complex.
The new build was mostly, I think, on CV. So if your CV was not CV, code of compliance was done after March 21, that would define it as a new build.
Okay.
Yeah.
What is this main home exemption?
Main home exemption is applying for the bright line test. So we spoke about the bright line test a bit earlier. So if you've got a home and that's the main home you live in, and if you're selling it to buy another home to live in, then you're not going to pay tax on that at all.
Because it's not been used for investment purposes.
Exactly. And that's a sensible one to have.
Yeah, but the rules have been changing on that as well. So before 27th March 2021, the main home exclusion, operated on an all or nothing basis. So as long as you use the home for more than 50% of the time as your main home, and when you sold it, if you sold it, it's you could get the exemption. Then the rules changed that if you bought property after 27th March 2021, the main home exclusion applied only for the period you used the land or the property as the main home. So so what could have happened is you might have a main home and you used it for a period of time in a year, and then you went overseas for a career break for 5 months, and the home's remain vacant that period there.
Right.
So that created some, does the main home exemption apply to you? Well, the good thing is it's changing back to the old rules. There's as long as you use it more than 50% of the time as your main home, then you'll qualify.
Right.
And that's changing from 1st of July 2024.
Now, before we went on air and we were talking about the Bright Line test, something that caught my attention. You said there's some interesting things around selling after the bright line period.
Yes. So, you know, it's all good that the bright line period ends and you say, okay, I can sell my house. So some of the things you still need to be careful about is, one, if you bought the property with the intention of resale, and if that intention has been crystallized in a document with your bank or your lawyer, it does not matter when you sell it. Whenever you sell it, whatever the period is, 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, 20 years down the track, any gain will be taxable because you bought it with an intention of resale.
Right.
The other thing people need to be careful about is, have you established a regular pattern of buying and selling? And IRD loves to see that, as a trader, even though you're not officially in that business. The other one is association. This is what you'll hear some people saying, tainted. The property is tainted. So if you're associated with a property developer, builder, at the time you've acquired it, when you sell it within 10 years, and none of the exemptions apply, like main home for argument's sake, there could be a taxing event as well. So what the Bright Line test has done is actually made the tax rules around property more complex. There's not one thing you have to think about.
No. A nice segue in a minute to talk about where your company comes in to help people, because, there's a lot of rule changes and a lot of information, so that's where the experts come. But before we do, was there any final thoughts or opportunities when it came to the residential property management side?
Well, I suppose the good side with the positive is we will get the interest deductibility back. So, I talked about my friend as an example. So hopefully in a few years' time, he won't have that much tax to pay on his small rental property that he has. The bad news, if you like, we're still stuck with this concept of ring fencing of losses.
Right.
So basically what that means is, if your residential property has incurred a loss, a net loss for the year, we cannot offset that against other income.
Right.
And maybe claim a refund for tax paid on that other income, such as PAYE. So what we have to do is carry forward that losses and we can only use that losses against residential income under the property rental income, or maybe any bright line income you've got. Mm. So if you had another property that you sold and you got a bright line taxable gain, then you could use those losses to offset the tax payable on the bright line gain. The other concept, the final thought on this one here is, like I said earlier, the rules are becoming quite complex. What doesn't help is the flip-flops, you know, 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, 2 years. Mm. This is your main home exemption. Back then, it is now. We're going back to the old ways. So keeping in touch, or just, you know, where the legislation is, it's not very easy. And it's one of those questions, if someone is selling a residential property, you need to address all these questions. Before gone are the days, you know. I remember when I started my career, if someone had a rental property, very simple procedure, give me your rental income, rental deductions, and that's the end of the story. Yeah. Now we've got 1,000,001 questions that we have to resolve.
Yeah, and just on that, it's probably best if you're thinking about buying or selling, just to give your accountant a quick call.
Yeah.
No harm in doing that. They're more than happy to take it. Mm. And they could probably advise if anything you need to worry about.
That's why we hire the experts. Now, Raph, before we went on air, you talked a little bit about Airbnb, something that's sort of come into your world, because I guess there's quite a few perhaps investors or just that mum and dad investor that's, you know, renting out a part above their garage or something as an Airbnb. Where do we sit tax-wise with that?
Yeah, got to be very careful with Airbnbs these days. One of the scary things is that if you're making more than $60,000 in income from an Airbnb, it could require you to register for GST.
Right.
And registering for GST also brings your property into the GST net.
Right.
And that can be very scary for some people, because when you do bring that property in, you bring it in, you can claim a GST deduction for cost. But when you sell the property, you'd have to pay the GST on the market value that you sold it for. And given how Auckland's gone, or the property market's gone, that could be double or triple the amount you originally bought it for. So something to consider there when you're going for Airbnb.
Brilliant. Yeah. Mm. Now, I've only got a minute left, so no pressure, Aman, but you've got a minute. Tell us about the advisory group and how you can help people.
Well, like I said, advisory group is a accounting practice with multiple discipline. So we are able to cater for everyone's need. Our clients range from small to medium businesses to large enterprises, including offshore businesses. We now deal with a lot of complex transactional issues. We're seeing a big intake from foreign clients into the commercial space in particular. You know, we're here to help you with the dedicated tax team that we have, which most practices our size do not have, creates a added plus, if you like.
Yeah, and I see, you know, you promote yourself for strategic advice, succession planning, but also buying and selling a business, but also come in and talk to us as the troubleshooters. So if you are having an issue, I guess you've got a wealth of experience, and that's the place to go. How can people get in touch and find out more?
Well, we'll have some material up on your website, in your podcast, but at the end of the day, just search us, the advisory group. You will come to the right place.
Brilliant. Yeah. And a great place to stay informed and get all the information. Hey, thank you so much, guys. Honestly, that has gone so fast. I said before we came on air, 40 minutes, you just blink and it's done. And that's happened. Thanks for unpacking all of that information in a way that all our listeners can understand. Really, really appreciate it. And we'll see you again sometime soon. Yeah.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks for tuning in today, guys. Have a fabulous short week and Matariki weekend. We will catch you next week, where we have some great health coaching for leaders and for all you busy people out there, which you might need after a long weekend. Take care. Catch you next week.